The Saturday panel on OTB.
In 1927, Cavan Coolidge was president of the United States, and it was the last time Dublin beat Cork in the All-Ireland Hurling Championship. They have met in the championship on 15 occasions, with Cork victorious 12 times, Dublin twice, and just a single draw. History, John, would tell us this will be a victory for the Leasiders. However, hurling is usually a game that takes on a life of its own.
Don't miss the panel every Saturday afternoon on OTB Sports Radio. Tune in 24/7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise? The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play in my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
All right, welcome along to Thursday's football show. Nathan with you for the next hour or so. Another hugely disappointing and frustrating international break for Stephen Kenny. We will be reflecting on that in a moment with Stephanie Roach. The Premier League back this weekend. Pep Guardiola signed a new 2-year contract with Manchester City. They're involved in the big game of the weekend against Spurs. We'll chat about that with Rob Daly. We'll also talk about what is going on with Germany after their 6-0 defeat against Spain. So all that's come. 53106 is the text number. I mentioned the Premier League being back. Our live commentary as well on Sunday sees Leeds United take on Arsenal. It is a 4:30 kickoff at Elland Road, and Brian Kerr and Stephen Doyle will be along with that one on Sunday afternoon. Goals as always on Saturday afternoon with John and all the gang. But Stephanie Roach is with us on the line. Evening, Stephanie.
Hey, Nathan, how are you?
I'm all right. I've just about thawed out from the Aviva Stadium last night. Not too much excitement for anybody. Those of us who were, I guess, privileged is the word we should use when we're allowed in to watch a football match at the moment. It certainly didn't feel like that sitting through the 90 minutes last night. We spent all the build-up saying Stephen Kenny's missing 14 players. He has two, maybe three of his first choice 11 in the team, so we can't read anything into this. Yet then we all read a whole lot into it, and there's no goals in 7 matches, there's no victories in 8 matches, and it feels as like there's a lot of question marks about where Ireland are going. Should there be question marks considering all that's been going on?
Look, obviously I think it's disappointing, the string of results that we've got, and I suppose the lack of goals obviously is the one that I think they mentioned it about 20 times on commentary last night, and how many hours it's been since a goal. So that's obviously a worry for fans and people watching. But I think, as you mentioned, his squad has been absolutely decimated, whether it be COVID or injuries, and missing really, really important players throughout a lot of the games. I mean, Coleman hasn't featured much at all, and different players that we've been missing over the last couple of games. But I think going into last night's game, if I'm honest, from my own point of view, I would have looked at it and hoped just get the draw and not get relegated and other results go our way, because, as you mentioned, the amount of players that have been missing from that squad from last night was difficult to pick. I suppose a certain 11 full of players who have played kind of more recently for Ireland and had a lot of caps over the years. There's a lot of players missing, you know.
They are still international players, and Bulgaria were missing a huge amount also and had their own COVID issues. Should we not have expected a little bit more from international players, particularly in that first half where Ireland really struggled to get anything going?
Yeah, I think the first half was a difficult watch, wasn't it, really? I think we were kind of under the caution and there wasn't a lot happening going forward. I think watching the game, even with my family here at home, we were talking about it and we were saying we should be with the players that Bulgaria are missing as well. And even if Bulgaria did have a full strength team, we should be probably doing a little bit better. But again, I think it goes back to us, I suppose, getting sick of talking about how it's a change in style of play, a change in football. And in fairness to Kenny, he is trying to implement that. And trying to implement it when you're changing players left, right and centre for every game that comes in is difficult. I know from playing international football, when you come in with the squad, you're not in for long enough really to be able to get everything across as much as you need to. So I think from, I suppose, most people's point of view, international football is about winning. And you want to win the games and you kind of get them in whatever way you can. But I think there's got to be a way up, and is it going to be that we give him the time to do what he wants to do, and hopefully he'll be able to do that with a bit more fluidity when COVID hopefully goes away in the next year, in the next campaign. But I think, look, it's not good to see. It hasn't been great, but I think he needs time to, as I said, implement what he wants to do, because it is a big change in style of play, and those players probably need that time as well with Kenny to be able to do it.
even without COVID, we're still in a situation where they're playing three games a week. And Stephen Kenny was asked after the game last night in his post-match press conference about set pieces and maybe Ireland not looking particularly strong again from set pieces. And he was saying, well, we don't get much time on the training ground even, never mind to practice set pieces. We're having very little time together at the moment because of all the different distractions and because there's matches and players need rest. How much time do you need to try and implement a change in system? Because you'll have played under various different managers, you'll have different ideas and thoughts on the games. It feels as though what Stephen Kenny's doing is quite radical in terms of Irish football. He's not going to have much time again in March. So does he need to change his ways to make it a little bit simpler for the players to follow if he's not going to have them for week-long training camps?
I think it's a mixture of both, really, isn't it? And I think, obviously, you'd imagine the players who are playing in there are tactically aware to be able to do what he's asking. But again, I think it comes down to the time that he does have with him. I mean, if you've got your match, then the next day it's usually rest day. The following day it's probably a light session. And then you've got maybe 1 or 2 days to really get proper sessions in. And he's mentioned like practice to like say of set pieces and stuff like that. So it is, they are small windows that you have them in. But I'd imagine Stephen Kenny in this period between the next games will be, I suppose, onto the players, whether it be sending on stuff tactically through email or Zoom meetings or whatever it might be, to kind of get them into the way that he wants to play. And I suppose get it into their minds more than anything before they come in, that they have that kind of, I suppose, how do you prepare for something if you can't do it on the pitch? It's difficult. But I think that's, as a senior or as a international manager, you have to deal with the windows that you have. And look, I think I've been an admirer of Stephen. I think he's trying to do the right things. And it's difficult to see, obviously, when you're not getting the results, you're not getting goals, to really kind of see him getting the backing that he needs. But for me, I think he needs to be given the time. I don't really see where else the FEI are going to go right now with, obviously, the way things are going within the FEI. There's a lot of trouble and financial issues. So I think we need to give him the time and get behind them. And hopefully it can be turned around and the players will start to play in the way he wants them to play come March.
What about the lack of goals? Because, well, look, 7 games, you mentioned it. 11 hours came up a lot last night as to how long it is. But it's not a recent problem. We touched on it yesterday that I think it's 31 competitive games now for the Republic of Ireland and 22 goals since Euro 2016. It's far less than a goal a game, whether home or away, it doesn't make any difference. Ireland have massively struggled since Robbie Keane retired. There's young players emerging, aren't getting a huge amount of game time at club level. There's the likes of James Collins, who I don't want to say is a journeyman, but is going to be 30 next month, is winning just his 5th cap last night, is scoring the odd goal here and there in the Championship so far this season. Is there much Stephen Kenny can do about the lack of goals if the quality of striker just isn't there right now?
Yeah, I think, look, you've mentioned the man himself there, Robbie Keane. I think that's the player who we really failed to replace over the years. And I mean, that's something that maybe is a natural gift, I think, a goal scoring gift. And you don't get many players who have that natural gift to score goals. And I think in terms of what Kenny can do, it's about, I suppose, getting players in positions to be able to create chances for us. Because I think we've talked about we have created some chances, but we haven't really had many real clear-cut chances, especially last night. I mean, Robbie Brady's chance to hit the bar was probably the best chance that we had. So I think in terms of goal scoring ability, it's not going to be one man who gets it. I think it's going to be the team need to play a certain way and to create chances for different players to be in the positions to score. You know, I don't think we can depend on one player to do that. As you said, if James Collins has come in, and I think he done quite well last night. I think he kind of was feeding off scraps a little bit. I think as a centre forward, he seemed to be in the positions the right times. I mean, the run he made across the front post and it just went wide, and maybe his header coming in from the right from O'Shea, maybe he could have kept it down. He just got it over the bar. But like, he was kind of in the right positions, but again, we weren't really creating a mountain of chances for him to finish off either. So I think it needs to be an all-round thing. It's not just about that one goal scorer. I think we need to have all the players trying to chip in and create chances, and hopefully we'll finish off a few and get some goals, because that's obviously a huge problem for us at the minute.
James Collins was talking after the game, saying that they've been doing a lot of shooting practice in training, that there's no issues there, that they're very confident when they're in training, and as you say, they're just not able to get into the right places on the pitch. Like, is there any relevance to what happens on the training pitch to what happens on the pitch in terms of actually scoring goals?
Look, I think, as I said before, I think in the position on the pitch, if you're in a good position to score, I think if you look at maybe Ron Curtis's chance last night, I think Jason Light done really well, good powerful run and slipped him in, and you're thinking, just slot it home, like just pass it into the corner and it's a goal. And he just never looked separate. And that's the player. That's not, that can't be coached, you know, that kind of way. That's not something that I feel as a player my manager can tell me to do right. You know, it's something that I suppose you learn as you go on, the chances that you have. Obviously, you can practice it in training. And as you mentioned, Colin said they have been practicing shooting. But for me, that's down to the player and it's taking care. And I suppose just being ready and composed when you get the ball to finish it off. And I think that's something we've lacked. I think we've seen it with even the likes of Burahan, who's a Premier League player, against Rakia, the chance he missed. That's down to the player. That's composure and finishing chances, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, maybe answer the question I was about to ask, because like one thing Stephen Kenny was always very keen on before he took the job was saying that he's sick of this, we don't have the players argument that's been there for years to play a more attractive style of play. But when it comes to scoring goals, like maybe we just don't have the players. You're talking about Ronan Curtis there. Ronan Curtis playing in League One. So he's not Robbie Keane. He's never going to be Robbie Keane. We can't expect him to be Robbie Keane. That Adam Ida is still not assured of a starting place in the Norwich team. He's only 19. I think we said he played 8 games of senior football from the start and half of them have been at international level. You hope Troy Parrott goes back now fit to Millwall and gets a run of games. That we're expecting an awful lot out of players that really haven't shown so far in their career they're actually ready to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think even just last night, obviously just the players that were playing, a lot of those players aren't playing consistently at their club level. So you can hardly expect them to come in at international football and set the place alight, you know. So again, I don't know. It's a difficult one, isn't it? I think obviously you mentioned Ronan Curtis there with the chance he missed and obviously the level he's playing at. But again, you have got senior international players who are playing in the Premier League who are missing last night. So again, I'm not making excuses because I think they haven't done it when they've been given the chance either. It's a difficult one, isn't it? I think obviously there's obviously the likes of Jack Byrne as well, who people are talking about in terms of he's not playing at a high enough level, but he's playing every week. So does he come in and play because he's playing every week, or is he still not playing at a high enough level to be able to play in the Irish international team? I don't know. It's a difficult one to put your finger on, but I do think we have talented players. I think Stephen Kenny is right in that sense that we have got players. It's just about getting players to the right clubs and getting them the right amount of minutes, because you can't have them maybe not. You look at the likes of Seanie Maguire, who's played in the League of Ireland, who was spoke so highly about, and then he goes away and is he playing enough where he is? Is he better off staying in Ireland? Is he better off playing minutes, or is he better off going and training at a high level but maybe not playing? So it's getting the balance right, you know. I think it's a difficult one because, as I said, I think we do have talented players, but it's not Stephen Kenny's fault if they go away and don't play, you know?
Yeah. Should Jack Byrne have been given more of a chance over the last couple of games?
Look, obviously, Jack Byrne is the huge talking point, particularly in my house. And obviously, I've got family who are involved in the League of Ireland. And I think, as I've talked before about, I think there are levels in football in terms of the League of Ireland is probably not at the level enough now for international football. But in my opinion, I think Jack Byrne is the exception. I think he's gone away. I mean, he was in the team of the year in the Eredivisie when he was there. When you think of the players in the Ajax team that he kind of got into the team of the year in that league, like he's up against some really good players. And I think he's the exception in terms of, I think he's got the ability to go and play elsewhere. But personally, he's choosing to stay in Ireland. So I think he is the exception in terms of he has the ability. I mean, I've watched him in the League of Ireland and he's miles and miles ahead of any other player in the league, in my opinion. And when I watched him against AC Milan, he was probably the second best player on the pitch, and that's slapped on ahead of him. So I think he deserves the opportunity. And I suppose the main reason is because nobody else is really setting the place. No one else is doing it enough to be able to say you can't play him. But I think he does deserve an opportunity to be given a chance, you know.
I think when we're analysing Stephen Kenny, a lot of people were on one side of the fence already, that he's going to come in and maybe he's going to be a revolutionary and had been talked up a little bit too much, and on the other side that he's coming from a League of Ireland background, he won't understand the players, and people are still making judgments despite all that has gone on. If we are to look at the positives of the last 3 months, is it all around that Slovakia game, that when Ireland actually did have the vast majority of their squad fit and present, even with the late withdrawal of Aaron Connolly and Adam Ida, that they played well away from home, they created countless opportunities. Conor Howard should have taken one, Alan Brown should have taken one. It's only penalties that Ireland aren't going to the Euros. That actually, when Stephen Kenny's had the players together, all together on the pitch, that there has been a clear sign of improvement.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's, as I mentioned before, I think that's kind of obviously Skirbaly's last couple of games with the players he's had to choose from. Again, I think after the Slovakia game, there were so many people just being, I suppose, it seemed promising. It seemed like, yes, he wants to do the right things. And I think as well what's important is that the players seem to be buying into it. The players are coming out and speaking really highly of wanting to play football and enjoying kind of coming out and trying to play against teams rather than sitting in and doing what we've done for years, which is kind of being hard to beat and getting the ball forward and hopefully getting a goal. You know, I think you can see the players are happy with what Stephen Kenny is trying to do. And again, I think if they have the full strength squad in there, I think the style of football that he wants to play, we can do it. It's just, as I said, he's been unfortunate with the COVID stuff. Even with that Slovakia game with Ida and Connolly being left out, I think Connolly obviously looked like he was going to start anyway. And like that's obviously a last minute change to a team that he's been working on. So it's little things that haven't helped him. But I do think, as I said, with the full strength squad, I think he can achieve something. And it's going to take a little bit more time, by the looks of it.
Ireland now are going to be in pot three for the draw for the World Cup next month, so we'll wait and see what that means. But we're back to a three qualifier week in March. We don't know what those teams will be, but again, little time on the training pitch. Do you think when they come together again that he'll have a fair idea of what his starting 11 is, of what his best 11 is? He's obviously ended up using a huge amount of players, far more than he would have ever expected over the last 3 months. Are there players who've come in over the last 5-6 games who've been given chances that have really taken them?
Yeah, obviously he's been forced into a lot of changes, and I suppose a lot of the players that played even last night would have probably not really expected to play, only for what has happened. So I think he did speak last night after the game. I didn't hear his full interview, but he said that some players have put themselves in good positions, and I think there are players in there who maybe will be pushing to try and start. But again, I think he's going to go back to, I think we've had the discussion about Hendrick and Brady. I think Hendrick has got an awful lot of stick over the last kind of couple of months and the last couple of games, but at the end of the day, he's a Premier League footballer and he's playing at a high level. I think he will stick with kind of the likes of Jeff Hendrick, Robbie Brady, obviously Doherty and Coleman has been the kind of the talking point really as well, hasn't it? But I think, I'd say he'll have to know. I'd say he'll, having worked with all the players that he's been able to give the chance, he'll have a fair idea of what his starting 11 will be. There might be maybe one or two who will have to kind of think about, but I'd like to imagine that. I think most Irish fans would like to imagine that he knows what his strongest 11 is by now.
As a footballer, how much of your mood, and we're often obsessed with the mood in the camp, how much of your mood is dependent on the results and how much is dependent on just the group and the atmosphere that a manager can create? Because I guess if we're to look at just results, you would have to think there's going to be confidence issues going into the matches in March, and there's going to be a sense of, well, everything has gone wrong. But does a good manager actually, when they get back together in March, somehow manage to blank all that out and rationalise it and say, listen, we all know that that wasn't Ireland at full strength. We all know that we've put some work in, but we haven't been able to show it. There's massively extenuating circumstances. And when they come together in March, somehow they can block all that out, Men in Black style, and start again?
Yeah, I think if they need to, really, don't they? And I think obviously the manager and the coaching staff will be really, really important to that. But I think all of the players, as I said before, should know that it hasn't been quite at the level that it needs to be. And I think you've mentioned, obviously, Colin's talking about the shooting, and they'll know that scoring goals is a big issue. So it's just going to be, I suppose, the players taking it on their shoulders and going into these games and being confident enough to be able to take shots to try and create chances and do it. But I think, as I said before, Kenny seems to have the players in, I suppose, a good frame of mind. They seem to know what he wants from them. And I think it seems to be a good squad of players who get on quite well. And I think they'll be able to get themselves going and hopefully get into the next game. And as you say, kind of talk about the positive from the games rather than talking about the negatives and try and improve on the things that didn't work out.
All right, Stephanie, great stuff as always.
Thanks, Nathan.
How's everything going with Piemont?
Good, yeah. Good.
You didn't, unfortunately, make the Champions League game against Glasgow. Massively disappointing.
Yeah, I had a bit of a COVID issue. That was okay. I ended up in close contact with somebody, which was a bit of a nightmare, and I ended up missing the game. Yeah, so, but in fairness, the girls done quite well. It was an unfortunate way to lose it on penalties.
All right, we'll let you go. Stephanie, thanks a lot.
Thanks very much, Ari.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power.
Less flashy than a Jurgen Klopp smile, but just as effective.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Welcome back to the Football Show. Nathan with you. 53106 is the text number. You can get us on any of our social channels. As always, we've just been talking to Stephanie Roach about the Republic of Ireland's draw and lack of goals. You can watch that back on all our social channels as well. We want to talk about some of the other events going on in Europe. Probably the big story of the week was Spain's hammering of Germany. Rob Daly is with us to have a chat about this. Evening, Rob.
Evening, Nathan.
What the hell happened, Germany?
I mean, they were really rubbish as a starting point. I mean, it was an extraordinary game. You looked at the lineups and you thought, this is a pretty good, even matchup. I'd probably say on paper that Germany's starting 11 is stronger. They had a front three of Timo Werner, Serge Gnabry and Leroy Sané. I don't think many national teams have a better front three than that. However, they completely fell apart, and it became evident very quickly in the game that Germany lacked the intensity of Spain. They couldn't match what Spain were bringing to the table in terms of energy and fighting to win the ball back. And they lacked any kind of cohesion. You know, the midfield looked completely disjointed. Bastian Schweinsteiger was on TV in Germany. You know, a guy who played a lot under Jogi Löw, the head coach, and was, you know, quick to point out how disjointed everything was, how there was no fluency to the way that midfield was operating. And time and time again, they got exposed by some really brilliant Spain play too.
It was more shocking when you started to look at the two starting 11s, because I was working that night, and when I heard the score initially, I presumed it was Germany who were battering Spain. Because when you look at the two 11s, you look at that Spanish team and think, all right, they're trying out a few new things. There's a lot of young players coming into the side. But that is a Germany team full of winners, full of Champions League winners, full of players from that great Bayern Munich side, supplemented by some of the best young talents across Europe. So there's no excuses in terms of selection for Jogi Löw. Was this just a team that probably have maybe heard the same thing too often from their manager?
Maybe. And you're right to point out how strong the team was in terms of that was close to what Germany would be thinking as a team for the Euros. Now, there were notable absentees, including Joshua Kimmich. Whether he plays a right back or in central midfield is one of the best in the world in either position, in my opinion. But it was still, you know, Toni Kroos was back from suspension to play in midfield. Leon Goretzka has been sensational for Bayern over the past 12 months. And bizarrely, Manuel Neuer, for me, was probably their best player on the night. Even though he conceded six goals, he made some outstanding first half saves. It was alarming, and the reaction in Germany has been alarming. A lot of criticism of not just Jogi Löw, the head coach, who, in my opinion, should have gone after the 2018 World Cup, and of Oliver Bierhoff, who's the team manager, sort of the link between the hierarchy of the German FA and the national team, that they should have made a decision. Bierhoff, I know we'll probably get into the game a little bit more, Bierhoff afterwards said that there's going to be no change. The result won't affect anything. Jogi Löw will be the head coach going into Euros. I genuinely think they could save their Euro campaign if they did make a change. It's it was really alarming. And you know, you build up credit. You have credit in the bank if you win a World Cup. Mm. So I understand, you know, and you get that. But that was 6 years ago now. And in club football, that's a lifetime ago, you know. David Moyes was Man United manager. Trump hadn't even announced he was going to run for president. That was a long time ago. So, you know, I don't know what they're going to...
Which were the good days, then or now?
Then, I think. Yeah, 2014. That felt like the glory days of 2014.
The problems are at both ends for Germany as well. So the record in 2020 is played 8, won 3, scored 14, conceded 17. Didn't have a single shot on target against Spain. So talk about attacking-wise first, because when you look at the Germany team that went out, and I know they were missing somebody of the quality, say, if Kai Havertz wasn't there, but still, right, that front three with the likes of Werner and Gnabry in there, you would think is just set up to create so many opportunities. Why did they not have a single shot on target? Why couldn't they get them the ball in the areas you want to get it to them in?
Spain's pressing was very intense, so Germany did want to play out from the back, and they actually played Serge Gnabry as the centre forward first off, which I really didn't like at all. It was Gnabry centre forward, Timo Werner left, and Leroy Sané on the right hand side. Part of the idea was that Gnabry would drop into central midfield when they had the ball and create a sort of central midfield overload, so it'd be four against three in that midfield, and then they could play in Werner or play in Zane, maybe a little bit like the way Harry Kane has been operating for Spurs, dropping a little bit deeper and playing out to the wingers. But they couldn't even work the ball into midfield. They were just completely ill-balanced in the first half. He tried to tactically change things up and shifted to a back three second half, but then Jonathan Tah was just overly exposed. He was way too aggressive front foot at centre back and just kept getting beaten. I know a lot of people say Timo Werner's not a striker, and I get he's so effective coming in from the left, whether playing in a front two or in a front three. Front two, as he did a lot for Leipzig. I still just think he's a striker. I don't know if people are just overthinking what Timo Werner is. He can play through the middle. He's played a lot there for Leipzig. He scored 30-odd goals last year in Germany in the Bundesliga and the Champions League. I just don't understand why you don't play. And then Gnabry and Sané are two of the best wingers in the world. Play them on the wing. Mm. I mean, it's. I don't know what they're going to do. And this current position as well that Jogi Löw has held since last year of not selecting Boateng, Hummels and Thomas Müller is starting to look like a huge mistake, because they also lack leadership. And you can just see it. You can just see it. They miss that kind of Thomas Müller, Mats Hummels figure in the middle of the park.
Conceding six goals obviously means they've got problems at the back as well. And I found myself commentating on all of Bayern Munich's games in the Champions League so far. So obviously people remember first night out, Atletico Madrid, they absolutely blow them away, and you think Bayern are going to steamroll every side in Europe. But then the games, the straightforward games, they were playing Lokomotiv Moscow and Salzburg, and they won both of them, but could have conceded three or four in both games. Absolute kamikaze stuff. They were losing out battles in midfield, pressing so, so high, getting caught out in counterattacks time and time again. And I couldn't believe just how open they were. And you're looking at them now thinking, Liverpool, Manchester City, get at this Bayern side. They are going to rip them to pieces. And then you're watching Germany the last night. I know Süle is there. Maybe he's the one common player between the two of them in the heart of the defence. Has there been a change in... Has this always been there, that weakness defensively, and teams just hadn't figured out how to expose it?
Well, I don't know. In terms of Bayern, you're right. They even at the back end of the Champions League, I don't know what you thought, Nathan, but there were games where, particularly even the 8-2 against Barcelona, they thoroughly deserved that win. They deserved to thrash Barcelona. Barcelona were really poor. But the amount of times you could just play a ball in behind them because their high line was so aggressive. In terms of the German national team, for me, this is just a dearth of talent at centre-back. There is not the quality they have in central defence that there is in central midfield. They are stacked in central midfield. They are stacked on the wings, and they have relatively good options at fullback. And they were missing Klostermann and Halstenberg, who maybe would have played the other night. But central defence is a real weak area for Germany. Like, they had Niklas Stark on the bench last night, who's, for me, a very average central defender. Matthias Ginter has played well for Gladbach, but he's not a phenomenal central defender that you'd expect the German national team to have. Mm. Meanwhile, you've got Mats Hummels playing some of his best football at Borussia Dortmund. He's not the player he was, but he's still a phenomenal central defender. Bayern just won the Champions League with Jerome Boateng at centre-back. He played 39 games last year. I honestly feel Jogi Löw could turn things around if he welcomed those guys back. But I just can't see that happening. I can't see him bringing Boateng, Hummels or Thomas Müller back into the setup.
Why won't he bring them back in?
He was pretty adamant off the back of some, a mix of the World Cup and the Nations League that came off the back of the 2018 World Cup, that he had to look to the future. There was a lot of pressure on Jogi Löw that he hadn't really adapted from the 2014 World Cup team, but he just threw the baby out with the bathwater. It was just too extreme to just throw away three of Germany's best players. It was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I get it, because Germany were going into the 2018 World Cup a massive national disappointment, off the back of having won the under-21s, if you remember, in 2017. So that was a whole group of players. They'd won the Confederations Cup without their first team squad in Russia in 2017, the sort of Julian Draxler team that Germany had at that tournament. Plus, they'd reached the semi-finals of Euro 2016. I don't know, it was just...
But these guys aren't particularly old. I know Thomas Müller, it feels like he's been around forever. But we're talking about players that are 31.
Yeah, Müller's 30, 31, isn't he? I mean, it just seems too extreme. And actually, I think the other night, I think other than maybe İlkay Gündoğan, they didn't have anyone over the age of 26, other than the goalkeeper, Manuel Neuer. Not that age is everything, and that age guarantees experience and leadership. You know, you can have young leaders in there. I'd say Joshua Kimmich, you know, I think he's 25, 26. He's a young leader. But it just feels like it's unraveling big time for Germany. You know, the inquest has been pretty thorough over the past couple of days in the German media. I would be exceptionally surprised if they made a change before the Euros, though. I think Jogi Löw will be the head coach for the tournament.
Right. Because obviously there's going to be a reaction when you suffer your heaviest defeat in, what, 90 years. And yeah. He is the man who brought them a World Cup, albeit, as you say, what feels like a lifetime ago. How does the dynamic generally work when it comes to the hiring and firing of the national team manager? How influential are the big name pundits, the former players? How influential are the newspapers if they turn against the manager?
They are influential. What might be a concern at the moment is there's a bit of an apathy around the German national team. There isn't great excitement around the team, despite the fact they have all these really thrilling, enterprising players, including someone who didn't feature the other night in Kai Havertz. But since the massively underwhelming 2018 World Cup, there hasn't been a big buzz for the national team amongst the public. And I suppose apathy from the public might keep Jogi Löw in the position. If there was this big groundswell, maybe they'd sort of feel pressured to make a change. You know, the tabloids, incredibly critical. Jogi Löw got a relatively easy ride off the back of the 2018 World Cup. Germany were really poor at that tournament, but he didn't get a kicking like, you know, thinking to someone based in England, what happens to the likes of, you know, Roy Hodgson or Fabio Capello or Sven Goran Eriksson off the back of a major tournament. They didn't even get out of their group, you know, one of the favourites for the tournament with some of the best players in the world. He sort of didn't do too badly publicly off the back of it. And it probably was the goodwill of what had happened, not only in the World Cup. Let's remember, ever since he took over, they've reached the semi-final of every major national tournament. So he's had a phenomenal run, but I don't know how long he's been, 12, 14 years. It's a long run as a national team coach.
They obviously had something of a succession plan after Jurgen Klinsmann with Jogi Löw coming in. Is that in place now? If they were to decide to make a change, is there a natural successor? I know Lothar Matthäus is saying there's only one man for this job, and that's Jurgen Klopp, but you can't imagine right now. It's hard to even see. We still have to remember this is international football, that like, even the Germany job isn't that attractive.
No, these let's face it, these jobs, you know, that were once seen as the ultimate, to be your national team's head coach, is below the jobs of the top sort of three or four clubs in each of the major European leagues.
Well, what about somebody, you know, like Julian Nagelsmann? Like, is he going to leave at what age? I know he's, what, 33. Is the Germany job an ambition?
I think it would be, but
probably
I think
in 25
now,
years.
Exactly. Coaches talk about it like when they want to have a bit of a break from the intensity of club football. They talk about it as, at the end of my career, I'll do that. Like, I was thinking even Jose Mourinho, I think, recently was saying, you know, he'd like to sort of finish with the Portugal job. But you could definitely see happening. But Julian Nagelsmann, these young coaches are so intense. There is no way they want to be away from their players for 4 months at a time. You know, the national teams don't get back together till March, I think, if the FIFA calendar has sort of caught up with itself now. There's no way. Nagelsmann, maybe Tuchel if he feels a bit burned out from Dortmund and PSG off the back of this season, if PSG gets sick of him, which is not impossible based on, you know, his relationship with the sporting director Leonardo there. Ralf Rangnick is the name who's been mentioned. Ralf Rangnick, 62, has largely been the brains behind the Red Bull empire, and in particular Leipzig. He's coached Leipzig a couple of times and did so just before Nagelsmann arrived. But a lot of top other clubs are looking at Ralf Rangnick, and I think maybe the fact there isn't an obvious option out there means that they'll stick with Jogi Löw for Euro 20. They're still calling it Euro 2020, aren't they? Euro 2020 in 2021.
Yes. Somewhat confusing. Your sense is that in all likelihood then Jogi Löw is still going to be there. I do just want to touch before we go, because I know you're at every Spurs game. You're one of the lucky ones. You still get in, do you? Do they allow you in even in those
COVID times? I get in, yeah.
How strange is it being in that stadium, 61,000 people, brand new, they spent £1 billion on, and there's 25 of you in there watching?
It is weird. I mean, I remember first seeing you at a game there, I don't know, what, a year ago now, and, and the place full, it is an incredible stadium. And I think this week, it is very unusual that it's empty. It does feel cavernous, and you're still up where we are and where you were when I saw you there in that TV commentary position where you're three tiers up. So you're still miles away from the pitch. But I think the absence of supporters is particularly felt at games like Saturday, because they'll host City on Saturday. And I was thinking back to last year and the win against City, the 2-0 home win, and the Steven Bergwijn goal that was on his debut. City at that point down to 10 men, smashed this volley in from the edge of the penalty area, chested it down and just hit it to right into the south stand, sort of that big cop. That's like 25,000 people or whatever it is. And the roar and the sound, like they suck the ball into the net. You know, it's really going to be missed on Saturday when they take on Man City, and which is, you know, suddenly, it, an absolutely massive game, it feels like.
Yeah, particularly when you look where Tottenham are in the table, second in the table, even with all the setbacks they've suffered on home soil so far. We're doing commentary on, I think we've done commentary on all their home matches so far this season, from the opening day when they were beaten by Everton to that 3-3 draw against West Ham where they blew it late on. What's your sense in terms of the belief that is in this Tottenham team that they can actually go and achieve something this season? Obviously, Kane and Son have been the driving force, but after a slowish start, it feels as though, we're obviously looking at Matt Doherty, it feels as though Mourinho is getting a bit more shape on them defensively as well.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That they still haven't kept a tremendous amount of clean sheets. I think they have kept a couple now in their last three Premier League games. And we'd seen, you know, the defensive vulnerabilities, in particular from set pieces. I mean, Jose Mourinho's main takeaway from the 3-3 with West Ham was they were bad from set pieces. And I get that. I didn't see that as a soft underbelly falling apart kind of thing. I just saw that as just poor defensive mistakes, and they have been vulnerable from set pieces, but they've looked a little bit better. Alderweireld and Dier might be the pairing that they're going to go with. But the way Harry Kane's playing at the moment, even the way he played for England over the past few days, he just seems to be another level. He just seems to be getting to another level whereby he can just run a game a little bit from up front, and he's dropping deeper into these areas. You know, this is not a original idea. Everyone has seen this. People who've seen Spurs, that Harry Kane's basically playing as a number 10 up front, with the wingers sort of providing that driving force, getting in behind, supplying so many goals for Son. But Harry Kane also was, you know, he's on 10 assists and 13 goals in 14 games. And granted, there's a few penalties in there, three. It's still ridiculous numbers he's putting up.
Yeah, it is insane. That change in Harry Kane, are you putting all that down to Mourinho? Is that a Mourinho masterclass, that he spotted something in Harry Kane, that he didn't just need to be this number nine, that he could be this creative 9.5?
Kane says that they haven't really had a massive discussion about it. He says it's just sort of been a thing that's happened a little bit. And I certainly think off the back of the Southampton win, the game where Kane assisted four goals all for Son, I think there was certainly maybe that off the back of it, it was like, oh, we really could do... really lean into this a little bit. They were doing it a little bit, and Kane has talked about the fact he thinks he could play a little bit deeper one day, and it might be encouraging for Spurs, given that they do actually have another striker on the books now in Kolas Vinicius, that the two could play together and Kane could play, you know, just off him or something. But I think it was sort of a thing that just sort of happened, and they've just gone, oh, we can really, really lean into this now. And the fact that Son's finishing right now is so clinical means that every single time Kane picks up the ball between midfield and defence, you just think, here we go, something could happen from here.
And Gareth Bale is back then, so suddenly it's an incredibly exciting array of options that Mourinho has in those attacking positions. What's your sense from being around the club of what the plans are for Bale? Like, is the hope that somehow Gareth Bale can be transformed to the player that was lighting up Champions League finals 3 years ago, that was destroying the Premier League 6-7 years ago? Or is the hope that actually, you know, he's a bench option, that's probably going to be the main use of him, and if he chips in with goals here and there, that's fine, but that there's actually, he's not expected to be a transformative figure?
I think something in between is actually quite reasonable. If we look at where Bale's been in the last few years, he hasn't been able to rack up 50, 60 games a season. And I'm not talking in terms of selection whereby, you know, Zinedine Zidane just wasn't having him at all in 2019-20. In terms of his injury record, there have been injury problems over the past 6 years for Gareth Bale. I think if you're Spurs, you're looking at it and going 30 to 40 games a year, the big games, he's in our front three. And champion, you know, well, not Champions League this season, but big Europa League games, getting into the deeper rounds of that. Every single big Premier League game, we'd want Gareth Bale to be starting. Whether he can do 180 minutes, you know, two games a week, the full game, I don't know. And they are being really careful with him.
Yeah.
They've been really cautious. I think the most he's played, forgive me, he may have played longer against West Brom, but I think 60, 70 minutes. It's the most he's done, and they have really eased him in. We've seen flashes of him. We haven't seen a game where he's suddenly taken 30, 40 minutes by the scruff of the neck and it's the Gareth Bale show. But I think fundamentally, to answer it swiftly, strongest 11, they want Gareth Bale to be in it, not a really great weapon as he has been probably at Real Madrid. He wants to be playing in the big game starting every single week, I think.
So you think this Saturday, Manchester City, this is a game that Gareth Bale starts?
I think that...
Provided it depends, can go 48 hours with getting
COVID. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I think the idea is review him off the back of what he did for Wales. He came off the other night, I think after about an hour, and gave the captain's armband to his club teammate, Joe Roden, for Wales, actually, against Finland. Assess him if he's sharp. He starts, I think. Lucas Moura is a really industrious option. He's really the other player who plays down the right, but his goal and assist numbers are not particularly high. I think they'll look at it and go, we'll play Bale down the right. Mendy is still out, and João Cancelo is very attacking. I think they'll, you know, I'd hope to see Bale lead the line in that one, because then on Thursday they play Ludogorets at home in the Europa League. They beat them very comfortably away. So if I'm just thinking out loud to you, Nathan, ruining your listeners' day, I think Gareth Bale should start at the weekend.
Well, listen, they've got Ludogorets, and I can tell you, Rob, that Bulgarian football is in a pretty healthy state right now. Things are going really well for them. Real dangerous attacking threat, so Spurs should probably prioritise that.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Rob, great stuff as always. We didn't have time. Next time we will talk about your starring role in the All or Nothing documentary.
Mate, I'd love to. I'd love to.
Next
I'd
time. To. Rob Daly, great stuff as always. Obviously, that Spurs-Man City game, that is Saturday evening here on Off the Ball. On Sunday, we'll have full live commentary of Leeds United against Arsenal, Brian Kerr and Stephen Doyle.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Less flashy than a Jurgen Klopp smile, but just as effective. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.